talking this segment about the Italian Film and Culture Festival, which is coming up starting later this week here in Santa Fe, this Thursday, and then next week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday here in Santa Fe, and then next week in Albuquerque. I'd like to introduce Luca Ceccarelli. He is a writer and film director. Gay Pollitt and Lisa Contarino, who are working with the Italian Film and Culture Festival here in Santa Fe. And Christian Pontigia will be with us in a little while talking about Italian food. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Thank you. This is something I've never seen in all the years I've been doing radio, is an Italian Film and Culture Festival in Santa Fe. Is this the first year of it?
No, this is actually the second year of it.
Okay.
However, the Italian Film and Culture Festival is 8 years old.
Is that right?
It started in Albuquerque, and Albuquerque is its home base. There was an Italian in Albuquerque who loved film and decided he wanted to see more Italian film. So he started it in 2007. And at the end of the festival, he decided that Italians love children, and the money should go to children, and he decided that UNM Children's Hospital should be the recipient of the funds.
Nice.
And so it is a nonprofit corporation with an all-volunteer staff, and all our proceeds, 100% of our proceeds after our costs, go to the hospital. And over the 8-year period, we have donated $200,000 to UNM Children's Hospital.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now, is this... Has it been in Santa Fe all this time, too?
No, it's been in Albuquerque all this time.
Okay.
And as you know, a lot of us in Santa Fe don't like to go take that drive.
Although for this, it will be worth it.
We've got
3 days of films in Santa Fe and then another bunch of days in Albuquerque. And I've already seen the 3 films that are going to be showing in Santa Fe. And they're fantastic.
They are.
Yeah. How is this put together? How is it curated?
Well, there is a group of film buffs in Albuquerque who are volunteers at the festival, again, Italians and Italian-Americans, who view recent films coming out of Italy and decide which they feel are most appropriate for an American and Italian audience, and that's how our films are picked.
Now, are there a lot of Italians and Italian-Americans in Albuquerque?
Yes, and actually in the state... And the state has a history of Italian immigrants coming here well before it became a state. There's a rather famous mine explosion that happened 100 years ago in Dawson, New Mexico, where the majority of the victims were Italians. And there is actually a plaque honoring all the miners that died that day that has been placed there by the Italian consulate of Los Angeles.
What did Italians do here in the Southwest? They were mainly in mining?
They were a lot in mining, but they came for work, obviously. But mostly they were miners, farmers.
And also masons. That's how many of the Italians came to Santa Fe, because they came to work on the cathedral.
Right. Being the artists that Italians and stone carvers that Italians naturally are.
So there's a very large community, but it's been relatively quiet until recently. One of the objectives of the non-for-profit corporation, which is Italian Festivals of New Mexico, is to promote Italian culture in New Mexico. And one of the ways it is done, in the primary way it is done, is through the Italian Film and Cultural Festival. But there may be other events through the year that they might promote for that reason.
Well, good, as long as there's food involved.
Yes, there's always food involved. You can count on food.
And film. I mean, let's talk about these films. The 3 films that are screening here in Santa Fe on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the 5th, 6th, and 7th of February, this week, at the Jean Cocteau Cinema are Happy Family, and then the next night, Salvo, and then the next night, Bianca come il latte, rosa come il sangue. White as milk, red as blood. And every one of these films, they're really different from each other. Every one of them is superb and gives you kind of a sense of maybe, I mean, actually this is sort of a question for you, Luca. Do they give you a sense of where Italy is at right now in its filmmaking process and history?
Well, I think that's a really good question. Italians have been involved in cinema since the early days. even the first examples of camera movements were associated with Italians. It was called the Caviria move. From Giovanni Pastrone is one of the first directors who is considered to have moved a camera while it was rolling. So they've always been very inventive and associated with the industry.
Isn't it funny that the camera moving while it was rolling was a great innovation? We take it for granted.
It is amazing. And what is incredible is how far filmmaking has come in the last 100 years. And this is not where the Italians have been at the forefront. They have not been at the forefront of innovation on the screen. We generally leave that to American cinema, because that's what it does best. What Italians do is really dive into character. And I think one of the things that all these films show is distinct characters having distinct experiences. And this is where I think what it really excites me about how this little festival has been curated is that it really demonstrates films and filmmakers who kind of beat to their own drum, which is not something you see commonly in American cinema, because it's driven by different factors. So does it reflect where Italian cinema has come? Yes, to a large degree, it reflects where Italian cinema has been able to play for many years, whereas we in the States, for example, have not, because we're driven by different factors.
Right. So we're driven by, I mean, it seems like filmmaking is a fundamentally commercial enterprise here, at least from the perspective of Hollywood, and independent films are their own kind of subculture within that. But these films demonstrate a kind of, I mean, they all have so much heart.
Yeah. A lot of heart and a lot of pathos. And I think you hit the nail on the head is, you know, films here are, it's a commercial business. It's a huge industry. In Europe, it has a much longer history of art. And the genesis that it's gone through, being art house or psychodrama trans films, or some of the early experiments that Truffaut and, you know, the early surrealists were doing, how it's been allowed to kind of grow into an industry that's not driven by the marketability. And yes, all of these films are driven by much more pathos.
Now, does Italy have a Hollywood, like a center of the film industry?
Well, I mean, Cinecittà was the biggest studio in Europe up until the early 2000s, when finally Ciudad de la Luz in Spain took over. Up until that point, some of the largest films in history were made in Rome because of the craftsmanship, because of the labor, but ultimately because of the craftsmanship. So when Cinecittà was in the heyday, was in the 50s, the 60s, but even Ben-Hur was shot there. Huge films, huge titles have all been shot there. So Rome has enjoyed the rise of a very, very rich industry. I mean, all throughout the years of Fellini, all of those extravagant sets, Baron Munchausen. I mean, a lot of very big films were all shot in that studio and continue to be today.
So the film Happy Family is a fascinating film to me because it's very stylized, it's very visual. It's about a writer, and you basically, the whole drama is a writer in his very well-appointed loft trying to write a story, but the characters come alive, and so the film that you're seeing is their story, but it keeps flashing to him writing them, so they're real and not real at the same time. And it is profoundly beautiful because it's so visual. The colors are very dramatic. Like in the beginning, I thought, my God, this whole film is red. And then at a certain point, it's all green. And then there's, I mean, if you saw it three times, you could probably analyze what emotion is going on in each, that's associated with each color, or what set of themes is going on with each color. And it's very kind of stylized and has a lot of artifice. And at the same time, the relationships in it are very genuine and touching. And I was looking at that and thinking about similarly stylized Hollywood films that have just as much kind of dramatic technique, but not that genuine relationship among the characters.
Yeah. In Italian, we have a word, you know, many words are really hard to translate, but one of them is sfizio. And sfizio is kind of like it's like a trickery. It's like just for fun. It's just for play. And that's what I love about Happy Family, is that it's a very playful film. It's very lighthearted, whereas it could have taken itself very seriously. Gabriele Salvatores does an incredible job at playing around, at having fun with it. I kind of think of the film as an ode to reflexivity. We talk about reflexivity in film as drawing attention to the very act of filmmaking within a film. And so just the setup of the screenwriter who's blocked and uninspired, so he turns to his characters for inspiration, he leaps into their world, but the very characters he seeks to bring to life basically rebel against him, against the characterization that he's bringing them, which makes him need to go deeper and deeper until he gets stuck into the story. And all the time, you know, finding more and more meaningful connections in these relationships, only to discover that he was the one who needed that meaningful relationship. And whereas, you know, this film, I think, probably has its roots in Pirandello. Pirandello wrote, was quite famous for a very famous Italian writer, Luigi Pirandello.
Who is mentioned very briefly in the film.
In the film. They relate to him. And he wrote a very famous play that was highly contested called Sei personaggi in cerca d'autore, which is six characters looking for an author. So in this case, it's eight characters, of which one of them is the author. You know, and they're looking for the direction, and he needs to step up and become a real author instead of just playing Simon and Garfunkel, which is where right. He seeks his inspiration. So it's fun and lighthearted.
And there's a lot of good dogs in the film. Now, the second film, the one that's screening on Friday, the 6th of February, is called Salvo, and it starts off quite violent. Mafia hitman, Sicily kind of thing, and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm not even going to be able to watch this. I don't like movies where everybody's killing each other, the whole thing. It turns out to be an incredible psychological study of a man, and I don't want to give too much of the film away, but basically he is charged with killing a rival gang member, something like that, and cannot bring himself to kill the guy's sister because she's blind, and it goes on from there. The acting and the editing in this film and the writing are so spare and give you so much sort of time and opportunity for reflection, which is also something that, I mean, I think is perhaps characteristically non-American or European.
Yeah. Well, I think if Happy Family is an ode to reflexivity, I reckon that Salvo is an ode to perception and how emotions get translated through camera as a medium, and where you can break down through cliches. I mean, Fabio Grassadonia and Antonio Piazza are two very young filmmakers. This was a first-time feature for them. And what's interesting to note is that it's based on a short film they did that received some attention, and rightly so. And again, it's about breaking down those cliches of when a hitman is taken in by a blind girl and the relationship that unfolds relationship as it buds on the screen. And that's a short film, and then they decided to make it into a feature. Again, this is the kind of film. First of all, I'm really happy that it received the attention that it did. I mean, you know, from the Cannes Film Festival winning the Critics Week Grand Prize, through to the Italian Golden Globes, or the equivalent of the Golden Globes in Italy, as well as, I mean, I think it's won something like 8 films and was nominated for another 16 film festivals and awards, and nominated for another 16 or so.
Well deserved.
Well deserved. And again, it's a great example of a film that ticks to its own metronome, to its own, you know, it's a drummer who's beating to their own drums. They're not driven by the classic formula that we've come so accustomed to. So at first, it's very disorienting, and we are as disoriented as the blind girl.
Exactly.
And as she gets her sight, we get our sight. Well, I shouldn't say too much about the story. But
yeah, and I think it's a little bit open to interpretation, what her perception is of what's going on. But it's just to note, the main actor is a Palestinian actor, Saleh Bakri.
Yeah,
very intense.
And relatively unknown.
I guess he's the son of a famous Palestinian actor, Mohammed Bakri. But anyway, that's on Friday. And then on Saturday, Bianca come il latte, rossa come il sangue. white as milk, red as blood. And again, we don't want to give away too much, but once again, you think teenage love movie and you inwardly cringe because you see the formula coming a mile away and it's not.
Well, it's kind of like saying, well, what if an Italian were to make The Fault in Our Stars? How would it look? And I think it's a great example of how it gets translated by a culture that is really quite exuberant. And, you know, it's interesting to I was really taken by these teenagers and how they differ to the teenagers in our culture. I have two teenagers myself, and I was so warmly reminded of what it was like to grow up in Italy with, you know, where you're driven by passion, and you're not as self-conscious, and you're not afraid to say what you think, and you talk back to your teacher in a loving and playful way. And at the same time, you can take a subject like love, like death, like exploring the deepest meanings of life, and have fun with it. You know, to take The Fault in Our Stars as an example and turn it into a comedy,
exactly,
is challenging.
And they pull it off completely.
Right.
I mean, not a false note that I noticed in the film. Yeah. And again, also very visually beautiful, yeah, very colorful. And you start to think as you're watching these movies that hundreds of years of painting tradition has seeped into the souls of these filmmakers.
Yeah, composition is just kind of an inherent part of the eye.
And color,
yeah, absolutely.
So we're talking about the Italian Film Festival with Luca Ceccarelli, and you are also a filmmaker. What are you working on these days?
I have two films in development. We just finished the fourth draft on a script that we're excited to move forward on. So we're going back and forth between here in Los Angeles, finding funds. And I'm also, we have a company called The Director's Edge, which is an online resource for directors to help them perfect their process and elevate their vision. And we like to say, be ready to rock when the camera rolls.
Right, right. Now, how's the New Mexico film industry going?
Oh, well, it's doing really, really quite well. I mean, it continues to be one of the favorite runaway states for visiting productions. It's been blessed with finally, after all these years of contention and questioning whether it's a viable form of economic development, we've finally got the report that says, yes, what we all knew is that this is economic development at its best. You know, the tricky thing for actual New Mexico filmmakers is always the same. It's finding funding and finding the resources to
right.
take your films into development. So, you know, so we have to go elsewhere to find the money. But it's a great place to come back and shoot. And, you know, our brothers and sisters in the union are well-employed and enjoying, you know, a good lifestyle due to an industry that is dynamic and innovative and exciting for a lot of people.
Let's turn now to Christian Pontigia. He's executive chef at Osteria d'Assisi. Your part of this festival is the food, which is happening on after the Saturday night benefit dinner. There's a benefit dinner, and we'll hear about the silent auction in a moment. But let's talk a little bit about Italian cuisine. You are from Italy. You grew up in northern Italy. And I was wondering if you could talk about the cuisine of Italy. I mean, can we talk about Italian cooking? It does seem to be so regional.
Yeah, it's really regional, but at the same time, like, it's the things I love more about Italy. Like, it's the food. I can go in everywhere, in every town. The recipe change a little bit, but all the time everything is so good and tasty. And I don't know, the food influenced my career. Like, when I was 14, I started to be crazy about food and make so many experiments and cooking. I decided to go to culinary school. And, you know, all the time, like, every member of the family, especially like on Sunday, all the families sit together and they make like this huge meal for everybody. Like you can stay at the table like 4 hours straight, meaning from the appetizer to the dessert. And it's my favorite part ever.
Now, what are the fundamentals of Italian cooking?
A little bit of everything. Like especially everything is organic. Like I see the difference respect in here. Like you go to the store and you see on the product organic. In Italy they put it when it's not organic, right? All the time everything is organic. Like I can buy the fish directly from the fisherman. I can buy the veggie direct for the guy grow the veg, and he's one guy just for the tomato, one just for the cheese, just one for the meat, and everything, and all the time everything is so fresh. And
so really it's about the ingredients.
Yeah, the ingredients. Make easy to cook. Good ingredient make really easy the life of a chef.
Now, how has Italian cuisine changed, and how has your work as a chef changed since people have become more conscious of, for example, low-fat diets, gluten-free diets, all those kinds of things that really weren't in place at all 30, 35 years ago?
I see change at different year. And I think that the classic Italian food is still like the classic recipe. They are still like the best recipe. Change just a little bit the presentation. We need like a contemporary method to present the food. But the art of the food is still like the old way.
How did you learn your trade as chef? I mean, you did experiments, you cooked at home, then you went to culinary school in Italy?
In Italy, I spent 3 years in Italy and 2 years in Paris for finish my school. But the big influence is like my mom teach me like so much.
Yeah.
And the mother of my mom. And I remember when I'm like a little kid, I like put the finger in every dish and like be so happy. In fact.
Do you still enjoy food and cooking now that it's your profession and you do it every day and there's deadlines and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I love my job. And I can eat whatever I want all the time. And I really like to see the expression of the people when they try like the original Italian food. Like many times, like somebody tell me like, oh, I have the best Italian meal in Santa Fe. And no, in Italy, when I'm on vacation in there, is like they honor me like so much.
Yeah.
Like, it's my preferred things at the restaurant.
Now, how do you get your good ingredients here?
It's kind of easy. Like I try to buy local and fresh and organic. We need like different farmer or local people, and I can go and check and try the food all the time. And there's just so many good people in here.
The last time I was in Italy, which was quite a while ago, I made sure to bring back some really good olive oil, and it was incredible. And it was the kind that they don't sell for export, and I had to seal up the thing so it wouldn't break in the suitcase. Where do you get your olive oil here? What do you think is the best olive oil we can get in Santa Fe?
But now I try to import different things from Italy, and one of them is the olive oil. For commercial purposes, it's possible to import like a big quantity of olive oil or in different products, and I really love to find the original product and bring it in here. Like my favorite oil is from Tuscany. And like I import it from there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, olive oil, extra virgin, and now it's possible when they try to bring more stuff as possible from Italy and make a taste to the people from Santa Fe.
Now, is wine also part of your training as a chef?
Of course. It's really important. Like wine and food is like the best combination ever.
And pairing the right one with the other and so on.
That one is really fun.
Do you serve all Italian wines?
Yeah.
At Osteria?
Yeah, we have like almost 98% of the wine list there are Italian.
So what can we look forward to at the dinner on Saturday night?
I play a little bit with the movie for the Serrata Rossa. And it's like the family is this Roman family, but they move in Turin. And I play a little bit regional, and I got to make like some plate from Rome and some other one from Turin. I got to make a bagna cauda. It's an appetizer, and it's something like the family that do like kind of sign of friendship to be all reunited. And it's warm, deep, with so many different ingredients. And it has really old recipe. After that one, like, I love to make a risotto. When I go to make a risotto, cooking in a Barolo wine, in one Italian sausage, and radicchio is really rich with cheeses. And I just love the smell when I pour the wine on the rice. After that one, pesce semolina is one European sea bass with mushroom and a little semolina puree. And after that one, the panna cotta. Panna cotta is one of my favorite desserts. Fresh strawberry. I got to decorate it with some caramelized almond. It's going to be fun.
Now, if you eat fresh local ingredients, then you probably have to eat seasonally because there are some things that don't grow in this time of year. What are the best foods in here in the dead of winter at this time?
Well, in terms of, I love the cabbage in the winter time, still the potato. I like to buy from the Romero farm. And I go, stick and go to the farmer market and see what they have and taste it and try it and bring it to the restaurant. And go to the farmer market is one of my favorite things at the restaurant. It's fun all the time.
Do a lot of people who go to the farmer's market, are those chefs that we're seeing? Because it's been, I haven't gone for years and I started going this year and it was very crowded. I mean, is that a lot of restaurant folks?
Maybe many restaurant, but many non-professional chefs, like people is chef at his house, and it's good.
Yeah.
I love to see like people buy his ingredient and experimenting on.
Now I have to ask the rest of you, Luca and Lisa and Gay. I mean, we've got five Italians sitting at the table here, which makes me very happy. Are you also, let's say, amateur cooks, Italian cooks?
Absolutely. I still cook. Meals every day. We sit down to dinner every night. We have a big Sunday meal. It's ingrained in me, just like Christian. I grew up with a family who cooked all day Sunday, and I think 4 hours is too short for the kind of dinners we held. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would start at 2, and I don't think anyone got up before 7 or 8, and we'd do a lot of conversations about politics, I'd say. Politics and religion are very common conversations in an Italian family while they're verboten here.
Right, exactly.
And then the ingredients in the pasta sauce. I mean, Christian is the executive chef here, but any Italian, you know, if we're in the kitchen together, I'm still going to bump into him and say, no, that's not the way my grandmother did it. No. We did it this way. We're still going to argue about it. I'm not going to take it just because he's a chef. No. All right, we're going to be comparing our grandmother's recipes.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
This is, and then we're talking generations here. I mean, the bagna cauda, what Christian is making, just to tell the listeners, is such a special dish that I have never seen on a menu in this country. And, you know, it comes from the northern, from the Piedmont area. And we used to make it, my grandmother's Piemontese, and we used to make it, and it was a head of garlic, not a clove, a head of garlic per person at the table. And I remember once the electrician came to our house, and he stopped, and he said, "Stavate mangiando la bagna cauda?" Were you guys eating bagna cauda? Because you could smell the anchovies and the garlic coming out of our pores.
Exactly.
You know, this is Italy. It's a beautiful thing. So thanks for bringing that, Christian.
You're welcome.
I'm excited to try that.
And grandmothers get up. My grandmother would start cooking at 5:30 on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And we didn't eat till after 2. So she was busy in the kitchen and doing it her way.
Right.
And everything was from scratch.
And I think it's people stay sit for a really long time when it's hard to stand up after the meal.
Well, and that's what, I mean, we only did that on holidays, but we spent every holiday in New York City where my Sicilian grandparents were. And again, I don't know what time they got up, but the women were cooking all day. And somewhere in my house, on a piece of paper, deep in a box, I have the recipe for my grandmother's meatballs, which I hope I find someday.
I think every Italian have the recipe of some grandma somewhere.
And we don't write them down.
Well, that's the problem. I knew I better write it down, but then the problem is keeping the piece of paper. But anyway, we're talking about the Italian Film and Culture Festival, which is happening here in Santa Fe Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And the screenings are at the Jean Cocteau Cinema, 6:30 on Thursday, 6 o'clock on Friday, and then 5 o'clock on Saturday, followed by the benefit dinner at Osteria de Assisi.
At 5:30 on Thursday, we are actually starting with food and wine at an opening reception at the Jean Cocteau.
Excellent.
And we will have staff from UNM Children's Hospital there, and we will have a swing that they use in the neonatal unit on display. It's a very important swing. It helps detox drug-addicted newborns, and the hospital needs 250 of them. And so the hospital will be there hoping some people might like to buy a swing for the neonatal unit.
So that's all happening this week. And then starting on Sunday in Albuquerque, there's all kinds of things going on. Now, is there a website that people can look at? Because we don't really have time to talk about that. But if you're in or living near Albuquerque or want to just drive down there, right, I can guarantee you it'll be worth it.
We have the website for the entire film festival, including all the events in Santa Fe, as well as an ability to buy raffle tickets for a week at a villa in Italy, are available on www.italianfilmfest.org.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Luca Ceccarelli, Christian Pontigia, Gay Pollitt, and Lisa Contarino, and once again, Italian Film and Culture Festival. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Please stay tuned.